Arguably the most famous whistleblower in the world is Julian Assange, the co-founder of WikiLeaks. He made a name for himself and for his organization in 2009 with the release of documents sent by Chelsea Manning, then Bradley Manning. Many of those documents embarrassed the American government, and a video that Manning included, now known as the collateral murder video, showed clear evidence of a war crime. I'm John Kiriakou. You're watching The Whistleblowers. Julian Assange is a hero to many around the world who value transparency and human rights. The free speech absolutist has exposed countless governmental crimes, especially those committed by the United States, and has been a thorn in the side of Washington policymakers for years. Three successive American presidents had to deal with Assange, with WikiLeaks, and with the fallout from WikiLeaks disclosures. There were different strategies. First, it was clear that the United States wanted to stop Assange sooner rather than later. There was an attempt to have him arrested on sexual assault charges in Sweden, and Assange's fear was that even though the charges were false, he could be arrested and extradited to the United States. He sought refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he was granted asylum, at least for a period. But the CIA worked with the Ecuadorian government to bug the embassy for audio and video, and they spied on Assange and every visitor he ever had. The pace picked up in 2017 when WikiLeaks published the Vault 7 documents. These were some of the most sensitive spying methods that the CIA had ever developed. Almost immediately, the Trump administration and the Department of Justice filed espionage charges against Assange. And then CIA Director Mike Pompeo told the media that WikiLeaks was a hostile non-state intelligence service. Soon after that, word leaked out from the CIA that it had discussed plans to assassinate Assange in London. And the Justice Department asked the British government to extradite him to the United States to stand trial. He faces well over 100 years in prison. Donald Trump was only president for 4 years, and in 2021, Joe Biden took over at the White House. Many observers believed a deal could be negotiated that would see Assange go free. After all, the Obama administration had elected to not charge him with a crime. It would be reasonable to think that Obama's concerns about prosecuting Assange while protecting the First Amendment to the Constitution would be Biden's concerns. But that hasn't been the case, and Julian Assange has very few options left in his legal defense. We're joined by Joe Loria. Joe is the editor-in-chief of Consortium News, founded by the late Robert Perry, and he's a former journalist for the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, and the Times of London. Joe, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, pleasure to be with you, John, always.
We all know Julian Assange from news reports. We know about his technical background. But tell us about the kind of person that he is. Why has he always been so concerned with transparency?
Well, he's from an early age. He was his mother was an activist. I think that influenced him strongly. And as a teenager, he did engage in hacking, which is what the U.S. government, like people, think he still does. And one of the earliest things he did was to hack some U.S. defense information during the Iraq War, 1991 U.S. war on Iraq. Julian is an unusual person in that he has put his own safety, his own future, his own life now on the line in the pursuit of what he considers to be justice and transparency. And he combined that very strong sense of justice and his abilities as a journalist, speaking and writing, with incredible technical skills that most journalists like myself, for example, have very little of. So that combination allowed him to create, with help, WikiLeaks in 2006, which was a whole that took, I think, the U.S. and British state and other governments by surprise. It's a new form of journalism. You know, newspapers had always published sometimes 3 or 4 pages of documents that you could read on a paper, like parts of the Pentagon paper were published, Pentagon Papers in 1971 by the New York Times. But the idea of publishing thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of government documents online that's searchable, that any citizen could look up and find a diplomatic cable or a military a note about something that happened in Iraq or Afghanistan or what was going on in Guantanamo. This was something extraordinarily new, and it took, I think, the governments by surprise. But the New York Times and the El País and the Spiegel and the Le Monde They all published, The Guardian, that's the one I forgot, published the same stuff he did in 2010. So there was a sense then that this had to be published, because if they sat on this, it would look worse than actually publishing. And of course, as we know, everything turned around on Julian after, we can get into this, the DNC leak, because before that, when he revealed George Bush's crimes, Republican crimes, obviously Democratic media were happy with that, but that changed. So this is at heart a political issue. But Julian Assange is an unusual man, and I think I could say that for sure.
Tell us about Chelsea Manning's decision to reach out to WikiLeaks way back in 2009. WikiLeaks published a lot of things in that tranche of information that embarrassed the government, but none of it was particularly damaging. And the collateral murder video was evidence of a war crime. For many of us, Assange should have been celebrated rather than targeted, but that wasn't the response. Why was the U.S. government's response to Assange so heavy-handed? And do you believe that Washington was trying to set him up on a sex charge back then?
Well, I don't know the exact answer to that. It does look like that to some extent. There was certainly a lot of communication between the British Crown Prosecution Service and the Swedish government about how to handle this case. And they tried to stop the prosecutor from coming to London to interview him in the embassy. This is over the allegations of sexual misconduct that the first prosecutor in this case, after the second day of these allegations were made, dropped the whole thing. It was taken up later. So what exactly happened there is not clear, may never become exactly clear. What pressure was exerted on Sweden and then on the police and the prosecutor's office to pick up a case that had been dropped? They also let him leave. They gave him permission to leave Sweden after he went to the police and spoke to them, and then the case was dropped. Flew to London, and then not long after he got here, and this is the time when he published the Afghan war diaries, this is in 2010, I think October, that they suddenly issued this arrest warrant, this red alert from the Interpol. And it turned out that there wasn't even the court that issued that warrant from Sweden. It was the prosecutor, a different prosecutor than the one who initially dropped the case, who issued this. And apparently the law has been changed because of that. In Sweden, you have to have a court issue that. You can't have just a prosecutor issue an arrest warrant. So he was, again, I can't say for sure what exactly pressures were put on the Swedish government, but it looks like something happened there that changed this whole thing around. And I have to say, Julian and his lawyers thought that at the time. And they said that this is not about being extradited to Sweden, but there's going to be onward extradition to the United States to stand trial on these charges that he now faces right now, espionage charges and a computer intrusion, conspiracy to commit computer intrusion charge, which is not hacking, by the way. The indictments do not accuse him of stealing the documents. So there's something fishy going on with Sweden. I wish I can give you a better answer, John.
Barack Obama famously said that he did not charge Assange with a crime because the U.S. government had what he called a New York Times problem. Can you tell us what that meant? If there had been a decision to not charge Assange with a crime, why was he forced to take refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy?
Well, I can answer that. He went to the Ecuador embassy because of the Swedish case. Because, as I said, that went forward, and the extradition request from Sweden to Britain to send him to Sweden to face questioning, basically. There were no formal charges. Everybody makes that mistake. All the time you read about rape charges and this. There were no charges at all. They wanted him for questioning back in Sweden, and he went all the way to the UK Supreme Court to stop the extradition, and he lost. And before they could send him to Sweden, he went to the Ecuadorian embassy and eventually got asylum and stayed there all those years until he was dragged out by the British police with the connivance of the new Ecuadorian government. So Julian Assange was afraid of that onward extradition, and they were very well aware of that, that's what was at the heart of this case. It wasn't about the Swedish charges, which kind of relates to the last question you asked me, that this looks like a setup, that it was all about getting him on anything they can get him on, tax evasion or this case where the women basically wanted him to get an STD test. And one of the women said the condom had broken, and that's why they wanted this. They never alleged rape. So This was, but apparently, and Swedish has very liberal laws about that, so that was considered a sexual assault, possibly, although again, the charges were never made. So this was a kind of a looks like a setup to get him to go to the United States, and that's why he went in the embassy there. He did not want to go to Sweden, not to be questioned about this these sexual issues, but to be sent on to the United States. That's why he went into the embassy.
The British government has been especially harsh in its treatment of Julian Assange. He was arrested technically on a bail jumping charge, but he's been held for years now in a maximum security penitentiary in London while he goes through the extradition process. Why has he gotten such harsh treatment from the British?
Well, unlike many people, even most people who talk about this subject, I do not believe Britain is a poodle of the United States. I do not believe that they are just a vassal of the United States. That might fit Germany more, but not Britain. Britain is a co-participant in U.S. adventures abroad. Just look at the Iraq War. Think of Margaret Thatcher telling George H.W. Bush, don't get wobbly about attacking Iraq. There are so many examples where the British government is very much in lockstep with the United States and maybe even influencing their policy. We're talking about foreign policy here of the United States, and Julian Assange is a threat to any state that is committing crimes, essentially, or corruption. And they have the power that we're seeing through the British courts to crush this man, like any tin pot dictator would do. Just when a reporter writes something they don't like, they'll throw him in the dungeon. And of course, we hear the sanctimonious stuff coming out of Washington much more than out of London about how these are human rights violations and the US has intervened. This is all garbage because they intervene for their own strategic and political reasons and economic reasons, not because somebody's torturing someone, because the America has so many allies throughout since the Second World War, all those dictatorships in Latin America, Saudi Arabia, Israel, they all are committing grave human rights violations. I'm not saying China isn't or there aren't in Russia. Almost every country has them. But they just pick and choose. So they use it in a phony way to go after countries saying that they are violating human rights.
Joe Loria, thank you so much for your insight. We have to take a short break. Stay with us for more of our conversation about WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange. We're going to find out the status of Julian's case in just a minute.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Arguably the most famous whistleblower in the world is Julian Assange, the co-founder of WikiLeaks. He made a name for himself and for his organization in 2009 with the release of documents sent by Chelsea Manning, then Bradley Manning. Many of those documents embarrassed the American government, and a video that Manning included, now known as the collateral murder video, showed clear evidence of a war crime. I'm John Kiriakou. You're watching The Whistleblowers. Julian Assange is a hero to many around the world who value transparency and human rights. The free speech absolutist has exposed countless governmental crimes, especially those committed by the United States, and has been a thorn in the side of Washington policymakers for years. Three successive American presidents had to deal with Assange, with WikiLeaks, and with the fallout from WikiLeaks disclosures. There were different strategies. First, it was clear that the United States wanted to stop Assange sooner rather than later. There was an attempt to have him arrested on sexual assault charges in Sweden, and Assange's fear was that even though the charges were false, he could be arrested and extradited to the United States. He sought refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he was granted asylum, at least for a period. But the CIA worked with the Ecuadorian government to bug the embassy for audio and video, and they spied on Assange and every visitor he ever had. The pace picked up in 2017 when WikiLeaks published the Vault 7 documents. These were some of the most sensitive spying methods that the CIA had ever developed. Almost immediately, the Trump administration and the Department of Justice filed espionage charges against Assange. And then CIA Director Mike Pompeo told the media that WikiLeaks was a hostile non-state intelligence service. Soon after that, word leaked out from the CIA that it had discussed plans to assassinate Assange in London. And the Justice Department asked the British government to extradite him to the United States to stand trial. He faces well over 100 years in prison. Donald Trump was only president for 4 years, and in 2021, Joe Biden took over at the White House. Many observers believed a deal could be negotiated that would see Assange go free. After all, the Obama... Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Joe Loria. He's the editor-in-chief of Consortium News, founded by the late Robert Perry, and he's a former journalist for the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, and the Times of London. Good to have you with us, Joe. Tell us about the status of Julian's case right now. We know that the British High Court recently ruled against him, but he has something of a second shot before that court, does he not?
He does. There's going to be a hearing before two judges that will last 30 minutes. So Assange's lawyers have 15 minutes to try to save this man's life before these two judges. They initially submitted 10 months ago, 150-page document asking for the High Court to appeal the decision of the lower court judge who did release him, quote-unquote release him, and then threw him back in jail by denying him bail, but released him on the grounds of that he would probably commit suicide if he went to a U.S. prison. And that on those basis, Assange won, but he was thrown back in jail. The U.S. then appealed that. They went to the High Court, and they issued, after that decision, they issued what was really new evidence that the High Court accepted, that of these assurances, these diplomatic assurances, that they would not mistreat Julian Assange. And the High Court accepted the lower court's decision that if he went to the U.S., he had suicidal tendencies. And what they did was replace that or supersede that with these assurances. They actually believe that the U.S. will treat Julian well and not mistreat him. And he has no dangers in the U.S. Penal system. And, of course, there's also big caveats in that assurances that if he does something that they judge to be wrong, whatever, and it's not specified what that is. And you've told me, John, on occasions that you know that if you look at a guard the wrong way, that could be a reason to throw somebody back in solitary. So he could be in solitary confinement despite the assurances. That was plain as day. But the High Court, as I said before, Britain is as intent on getting him for revealing these state secrets as the United States is. So they, this High Court accepted those assurances. And the U.S. won. And then Assange wanted to go to the U.K. Supreme Court to challenge that decision. And the U.K. Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to hear the case. So went back down to the last effort he had, which was to a so-called cross appeal, which was to appeal that section of the lower court judge, Vanessa Baretza, who agreed everything on points of law and politics in that document. Her decision all agreed with the U.S. on everything, except that his health wouldn't permit her to send him to the U.S. When that was overturned, Assange's lawyers filed this cross appeal, where they would look at his rights to free speech, the abuses of due process. There was about 8 to 12 points that they argued of law, and the High Court, after 9 months, one judge, Sir Jonathan Swift, with his Lilliputian reasoning, just rejected in 3 pages his 150-page submission and said, nope. Denied, 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 and that would mean they have one last chance, which you asked me about, and that is this last-ditch effort to go before two judges in a public hearing for 30 minutes. And we're waiting here in London for that to happen. It could be any day. Nobody's ever informed of that, even Assange. People don't know. We were at two events in Parliament Square on Saturday, and then Julian Assange had a birthday party in which, of course, he was conspicuously absent. But we heard a lot, and we talked a lot to Stella and to Kristen Craftenson about what's going on, and they, it could come at any time, this hearing. And if they reject his hearing, whenever they make that decision, he could be put on a plane that night to the United States. There is one last chance, and that is the European Court of Human Rights, which his lawyers, Assange's, submitted a filing in December asking them to intervene. There are cases where the court has intervened. And there was one here a year or so ago where some Rwandan refugees were being sent back by the Home Secretary to Rwanda, where they clearly were in danger. And the plane was on the tarmac at a London airport, ready to take off, and the European Court of Human Rights ordered it to stop, and it did. However, so that's what they're hoping could happen. However, it's so complicated, and I've been researching this for a piece I want to do on the European Court of Human Rights and whether Britain is actually obligated to it. The treaty in 1953 that set this court up says that all states are obligated to follow the rules of the court, the decisions of the court, which would mean they have jurisdiction over all the members of the Council of Europe. So Britain is still part of this court. It's not anything to do with the EU. This is the Council of Europe, of which Britain is a member. So they are obligated according to the treaty. However, in 1998, the British Human Rights Act, the language was different. It said British courts only need to take consideration of the decisions of the EU. So which one will rule? This is very much like the debate between the UK-US extradition treaty, which bars extraditions for political offenses, and the Enabling Act in Parliament for that treaty, which left that out. So we've got these two contradictions here between, in both cases, the treaty, the extradition treaty and the act, the Extradition Act, and the Human Rights Act of 1998, which seems to say something different than the treaty. So there's not a lot of optimism amongst Assange's people that I've talked to here in London, that the ECHR, the European Court of Human Rights, will be able to save Julian.
Joe, give us your assessment of the government's case. The Justice Department's star witness is a convicted liar and a pedophile. Certainly the prosecutors wouldn't want to go into court with that. It seems to me that it would be better for everybody if the prosecutors offered Julian a deal with time served and then allow him to go home to Australia. That way, Washington saves face and Julian would be free. Is that even under discussion, to the best of your knowledge?
Jennifer Robinson, one of the Julian's lawyers, an Australian, but who works here in London, actually said for the first time at the National Press Club in Canberra on May 22nd that they would consider a plea. But what is he going to plead to? That was never said before. There was talk of a so-called Alford plea, which is a bizarre thing in the U.S. statutes where a defendant can say, I'm not guilty, I didn't do this, but I'm not going to get a fair trial. I know this is helpless. I just want to get out. So I'll plead guilty technically, but I didn't do it. And this is what David Hicks, an Australian who was thrown into Guantanamo, actually used to get a plea deal in which they sent him back to Australia and he served 7 months. So when this became, there was a lot of excitement when Biden was going to go to Sydney to meet with Albanese, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese of Australia, and then he canceled at the last minute his trip. But just before that, Caroline Kennedy, the American, the daughter of slain JFK, the now U.S. ambassador to Australia, invited six parliamentarians from two parties and one independent to come for lunch in Canberra at the American embassy to discuss Julian Assange's case. That couldn't have happened without the State Department, if not the White House, approving that. So there was all this excitement. Then Albanese went on TV shortly, 5 days before that. He had said on ABC television, Australian Broadcasting Corporation, when he was here in London for the coronation, that he has talked to American officials and he wants the case to end. He's worried about his health. So there was all of this came up. And then we found out the FBI is still investigating the case. And then the judge decided to reject that hearing. So if there's going to be a plea, it's got to come at the last minute. And if Joe Biden remembers what he said in 2010, who knows, He would follow the principle then, because nothing has changed. This case should be dropped. He knows that. He knew there was no basis for it back then, and he knows now. Now, what the Trump administration did was add some to the computer intrusion conspiracy charge, in which they got this guy in Iceland, as you say, a convicted fraudster, to say to the FBI as an informant that Julian was going around telling people to hack, and he was hacking. And then the guy came forward to an Icelandic newspaper and said, "I lied." He admitted he lied, so that thing collapses. That part of the case would collapse if the court accepts that this guy says now that he lied. So nothing has changed from 2010, and Biden should do something, do the right thing.
What do Julian's supporters plan in the event that he's extradited to the U.S.? If that happens, Julian would be tried in the notorious District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. That's the home district of the CIA and the Defense Department. So what's the strategy?
There's a big plaza in front of the federal courthouse in Alexandria, which I have an apartment just 8-minute drive from there by coincidence. I hope I don't have to make that drive to cover this trial. But if he's there, I think that plaza would have to be filled with supporters and protesters from around the country, if not the world. That's number one. Number two, there has to be heavy pressure on, this has to happen now, and it hasn't happened. Pressure on politicians, members of Congress. You know, Julian has gotten support from presidents in Latin America, from now the prime minister of his own country, all the human rights groups and press freedom groups have all come out behind him. Even the New York Times and those other papers I mentioned wrote a joint letter to Merrick Garland, the American Attorney General, saying drop the charges. This is a threat to free press. It's not just about Julian Assange. And nothing has happened yet. So what could the strategy be other than to make a ruckus and to try to make it a difficult political issue for Joe Biden? Because there's going to be an election coming up next year. And does Biden want a media circus there, and where it becomes clear that he's prosecuting a reporter for reporting wrongdoing by the United States, which is what journalists are supposed to do? It's so clear. If that becomes clearer and clearer to the public, and most importantly, if MSNBC, which on the night he was arrested, said it was wrong because all journalists are a threat here. The New York Times editorial back then said that, let alone this letter. So they know, the mainstream media, the most powerful, like MSNBC, like the New York Times in the United States, they know what this means to journalism, to their own jobs. I remember Rachel Maddow that night saying, "I don't like him." You know, of course she doesn't like him because of the DNC leaks, which is, by the way, why Biden is not moving, because that's not in the indictment. The DNC leaks, at which the Democrats still say helped Hillary lose, despite the terrible campaign she ran, and he was just publishing true information. Nobody's denied that. Members of the DNC had to resign because it was true. And the CIA Vault 7 leaks, which infuriated the CIA and Pompeo in particular, which is when he went after Julian, and even, as we know, from a court case in Spain and then by Yahoo News reporting, that there was plans discussed to poison or kidnap Julian Assange from the embassy. This is because of the CIA leak. And the DNC, so I think Biden is being pressured by the DNC, his own party, where he's supposedly the head of, and the CIA, not to let the guy go, which has nothing to do with the indictment at all. So Biden is back to square one, back to meet the press in 2010, when he said we didn't prove that he stole the documents and we can't indict him. Nothing is in the indictment about the DNC leaks or the CIA. It's a purely political issue that changed the face of this case for the Biden administration. Trump indicted him. Trump took advantage of his arrest by this new government in Ecuador. It's the Trump administration that, why would the Biden administration follow their hated Donald Trump's administration? Right, because it serves the CIA and the DNC now.
Joe Loria, thank you for your insights. And thanks to our viewers for tuning in. Being a prophet in the wilderness, speaking truth to power, often leads to poverty and to punishment. It's far easier to follow the winds of public opinion, but some things are black and white, right or wrong, and it's always better to speak truth to power. That's what Julian Assange has done. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.